You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, episode number 71.
You can be my apprentice.
What does an apprentice do?
Many, many things. First, you can start by sweeping the floor.
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, the show where we talk about everyone's favorite television series. Well, Once Upon a Time, that's easy. And today we're going to talk about the episode The Apprentice. Joining me today, David Handlows and Lisa Jones. Welcome to the show. How did you like this episode?
I guess I'll go first. I liked it. It was a nice kind of clean look at some characters that we like.
And David, what about you?
I liked it too. They finally moved a few things forward. Finally,
which was the thing that they moved forward that you were mostly looking forward to? What well, needed to be forwarded?
Well, they finally let Hook and Emma actually go on an actual date. As strange as it was.
Mm-hmm. So. Yes, featuring reattached hands and whatnot. Well, let's bring back the episode itself by playing the trailer here for a moment, and then we'll just dive in.
I'm here to ask you out.
Next Sunday, there's only one thing that can make dreams come true.
Can you reattach it?
A little magic.
So what do I call you now, Captain Hand?
But making a deal with the Dark One.
I'll do whatever it takes to help my sister.
Whatever it takes.
Oh, I love it when they say that.
Always has a price.
The only way for you to escape your fate is by killing me.
Yes. New Once Upon a Time, next Sunday, 8, 7 Central on ABC.
This episode brought back a lot of themes and even some structure that was so defining for this show in the first season. The deal with the devil, Rumpelstiltskin, even Gold being back to his former evil manipulating self. There was love, there was true love, the lack thereof, there was magic that worked and magic that didn't work, there were surprises, the visual surprises, intrigue, jokes. There was so much in this episode, I just couldn't believe it. They did, I think, a fantastic job. Let's talk about the opening first. I mean, did you all see that coming, that was actually the true sorcerer's apprentice there? Locked up in that dungeon? I was like wondering what happened there.
No, and then they made you think that it was Rumple, you know?
Yes.
And I thought maybe at first, because it's an old guy with the beard, I mean, I immediately went to Merlin, you know, as the sorcerer, and then it was like, no, he's the apprentice. I'm like, oh, he doesn't look much like Mickey Mouse. I mean,
yeah,
you know?
I wouldn't have pictured him as an apprentice. He would have been like the, you know, the wizard or the retired wizard or something.
Yes. I totally didn't see it coming how they would bring in the mouse. I thought that was just brilliant idea.
Yeah.
It took me a while to realize that, wait a minute, that's why he turns into a mouse. But mm-hmm. I loved it. Well, what happened in that dungeon? You see that there are holes in the walls, and I don't even know where they are. Is it just a random old place, mysterious and just magical, or is there any clue as to where this takes place? It's underneath the house in Storybrooke, basically. Also harkening back to what we saw in the first season, where basically the Enchanted Forest is there, right where Storybrooke is, and it is just covered by layers of earth and dust, and you just have to dig, and then you will find the old remnants of the forest.
Yeah, I never got that they really showed us where it was, but it was somewhere close, you know, to where they were in the Enchanted Forest.
Mm-hmm.
That was always a little vague to me. Like, okay, so parts of the Enchanted Forest are underneath the town, but at the same time, it's in a completely different world.
Yeah,
I wasn't sure. So,
well, but I guess since it's a magical forest, perhaps it's just a dimensionally different, and it can be in Storybrooke, and it can be elsewhere as well. I also was kind of wondering about the object, the box, the and then the location of it on what to me obviously looked like, I'm a priest, so I'm thinking that is a baptismal font. And it's just modified a little bit, but that must be a prop from a church or anything. It's octagonal, which is very, you know, often used for baptismal fonts in the Catholic Church. This time, it is, of course, kind of like the repository for this starry box, which contains a very powerful starry hat in shape, very similar to, of course, the iconic hat that Mickey Mouse wears in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. And even the stars are in there. And apparently it is also some kind of like I was thinking a magical vacuum cleaner. If you switch it on, it will just sucks all the magic out of the room and will store it in a reservoir that has no end. And then you can use that at any time to, well, for your own purposes, which is something interesting. And you can of course, obviously understand why the Dark One wants to own it, because it can break that final limit to your power, which is of course the power of the dagger and the one who holds it. But you get that kind of the guardianship of that apprentice who is there perhaps eternally to kind of keep that hat from ending up in the wrong hands. I was getting a lot of vibes from the second Indiana Jones movie. With the Holy Grail, and you have that soldier. Remember that the very ancient soldier who's like guarding it from because that cup must not end up in the hands of evildoers.
And that's the third movie, by the way.
Is it the third movie? I'm getting
confused.
That's
the third movie. Oh, yeah, the second one's the one with the in India with the creepy, you know.
Yeah, you're right. Stuff. Yes, which is actually a prequel, I think, to the first Indiana Jones movie. It's been a while since I watched those. I guess I got the Tarzan yell in the fourth movie, and the aliens kind of turned me off.
Yeah,
never gonna watch this again.
Yeah, but it did have that vibe. The whole remember only the penitent man shall pass and all that from Indiana Jones, and here it was the same kind of thing. You have to be pure at heart to do it. And what I loved is that, you know, the apprentice was like, all the dark ones have always tried this. You know, it's like, here you are again. Here's another dark one. And it just gives you that, that it's been going on forever. You know, that you forget that you think that Rumpel as the dark one is kind of like the thing, but no, he's just one of many, unfortunately.
And the cool thing is it's a staple ingredient for a lot of fairy tales. You know, many knights have tried to take this sword and pull it out of the stone, but they have all failed until that one, you know, person comes around. And well, that of course had to be Rumpel, but to our surprise, that's not the dark one that we see in this little preview or this flashback, I would say.
I was thinking, seriously, Sword in the Stone and Merlin. That was my first impression when it came on. I don't know why, but
yeah. Well, it was kind of visually similar, and it had that same idea of, well, who's gonna be able to acquire this object. Let me welcome also Deborah, who's now also online. Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Good to have you on the show as well. We started without you, but you were getting some lunch. We just were kind of worried that you choked in a poisonous apple or something like that. But glad to see you.
No, I've been resurrected, apparently.
Very good. Let me ask you, what did you think of this episode?
Liked it. I would probably give it like a 7 again. Mm-hmm. You know what I liked most about it was probably the Sorcerer's Apprentice stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was visually very much referring to the whole Disney dimension almost of this show.
Oh, yeah, and we're not done with it either because, you know, basically I don't know how far we've gotten to this topic, but, you know, the end of the episode has Henry basically starting as the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yes. Well, we're still at the very beginning in that underground depository for the magical hat. And I think the name on the dagger was something like, I wasn't sure if it was Zoso or Ozoz.
Yeah.
No, it was Zoso. It's the same one that Rumpel killed to become the Dark One.
That was what I was thinking. Yeah. Is like it's the same dude.
It's the same dude.
And the apprentice calls him Zoso.
Okay.
Yep.
Zoso. So, well, of course, he is unable to activate the hat because apparently it doesn't work well with these evildoers or their daggers. And so he's thrown against the wall, almost like in the fight between Gandalf and what's his name, Saruman. You know, there's a tremendous, almost like opposite poles, and he's rejected by the object, which makes me think that ultimately the hat must have a benign purpose if it is meant to be activated by, you know, innocent people or people that have resisted the lure of evil, then that hat is to do good. But then I'm wondering, why is it that vacuum cleaner that can suck up people and everything? There should be like a failsafe on that thing. It's not very responsible of the magician to leave that behind like that. By the way,
well, where is the sorcerer?
Yeah, who is the sorcerer? Are we ever going to see him, or is it just, is he gone? Is he dead?
Is the sorcerer the guy who wrote the book? And if this guy, and
good point.
My thought was, is he the guy who wrote the book? And on a slight tangent, if this guy is the apprentice, how old does he have to be to become the wizard? This guy has been around the apprentice for centuries, apparently.
How cool would that be if the sorcerer is going to be the big reveal at the end of this season, and it's going to be the one who wrote the book? That totally makes sense. Wow, I love that theory, David. That is
what I'm hoping for.
We switch from that to a very kind of fluff moment where Emma is asking out Hook on a date, and he's like, "You know what? Shouldn't I be doing that?" and then we get the whole sequence of there's water underneath the car, which is kind of weird. And they do pay it off, but almost as an aside, I felt that the whole Snow Queen thing was so underwhelming and almost like, oh, we forgot about her. Well, let's just put some water underneath the car and do some slippery thing with it. What did you think of that? I thought it was like weird. Almost an afterthought. And I felt that the episode could have done without her. Just leave it for the next time and just focus on the main theme.
I think they just wanted to show some little bit of continuity from the last episode to here, because we really didn't delve into her storyline, you know, too much. So
a little bit of foreshadowing.
I think that the scenes they did with Emma and Hook and the date, I mean, those were some of my favorite of the night. A little cheesy, but at the same time, I mean, again, it gave them their opportunity to write those great one-liners they do so well.
I think it was done on purpose. It wanted to be cheesy. It wanted to be overtly romantic. But they also play around with it. They have some fun with it, especially when she comes back from the date and then Snow and Prince Charming are sitting there. Well, so what? Tell us. You know what? Some people don't want to have all the details.
It's like it's prom or something, you know?
Exactly.
Taking pictures. Exactly. He's going to ask, what's your intention with my daughter? You know, I liked that.
Well, and in a way,
she's wearing a prom dress. So.
It's understandable. Yeah, she has a prom dress, and that's what they all missed. They never had a child growing up. And so it's kind of understandable that they want to, you know, live what every parent gets to live through. Yeah. And, well,
just have it's like a normal moment for them as a family, just to experience the normalcy.
I like it. The only thing that makes it a little bit awkward is that Emma is clearly a bit too old for that kind of behavior. I mean, it's like,
and they're all the same age.
Yes, right. That too. That makes it a bit awkward, but oh well, we're used to it now. What I didn't expect was the whole, like, give me back my hand. Oh, I have it here.
It's in a jar.
It's in a jar. It's like, gosh, that almost looks like something from Doctor Who, where there is actually also a hand in a jar. And I don't know. It's probably coincidental, but...
Did you see all the stuff that was in the background for this episode?
I saw some things, but I didn't have the time to freeze frame and analyze it. What did you see, Deborah?
I'm sorry to have, you know, change the subject from hand, but I was not paying attention to that. I was paying attention to the cello and the trumpet and all that. And I'm like, ooh, an homage to Fantasia, in my opinion.
Oh, that makes sense.
Symphony. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there were these 1950s robots on the pillars.
And what was that?
Yeah, well, and it took me like 20, 30 minutes worth of internet searching. Yeah, there's time well spent. trying to figure out what these, because they were very colorful, if you didn't notice them. They were very colorful. And they were always out of focus. There was like maybe two shots where they were in focus where I could kind of see what they were. But the closest I came up with was a 1950s mechanical robot. And I'm like, I wonder what the significance of that is.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, before we talk more about the little details in the background, that's what we do on this show. That's what we love. Let me take a very short break to tell you how you can support this show. That's very simple. Write a positive review on iTunes, and preferably a positive review. If you go to iTunes, and Lisa, you had the audacity, the temerity to go over there and read some of those reviews. And let's say it wasn't always a magical experience, right?
No, it wasn't.
Let's say some people just want to push us to be better than we currently are, and we totally understand that. We're just a couple of friends talking about a show that we love, and we don't pretend to do anything more than that, but according to some people, we're not doing well enough. Well, if you like what we do, and there might actually be no one listening to this, we might just be in an echo room, but at the same time, I see still that people are downloading the show. So if you like what we do and you want to kind of counterbalance some of the negativity on iTunes, then please go over there and, write why you like it and why other people should listen. We would be very, very grateful. And then, of course, if you don't have time, you can just give us a 5-star rating. And that just helps other people find this show. So don't let the haters win. Wave your magical wand and conjure up some positive magic. We cannot let the darkness win. Thank you so much for supporting us and supporting our efforts to bring you this show every week. Let's go back to the episode. The things in the background. Any other details that or inside jokes? We also already mentioned, of course, the mouse, and that, I think that was one of the best hidden Mickeys that we've ever seen. It was basically a Mickey right there.
Yeah, I loved when they walked into the restaurant for the date. What was it, Tony's? And you've got Lady
of the Tramp. Oh, fantastic. Yes. You know, right, the spaghetti scene.
The spaghetti. And that, you know, that was of course, then one of my kids goes, I've never seen that. And I thought, oh my gosh, how is that possible? Wow. So now we have to watch that.
No, it was fantastic. One second I was thinking, oh my God, I hope that's not Emma and Hook. That would be so horrible. But it wasn't. It was just two people in the foreground. But that Italian, I was also expecting like a musical reference to, you know, This is the Night.
But right. No, we didn't get that. They even have the wine bottles with the drippy candles and the red checkered tablecloth. They really did it. I liked that.
Well, and I think they could have gone overboard with that, and I wouldn't have minded at all because it's just so iconic. The only really Italian thing that we saw were the breadsticks, and that was it.
We watched that with my daughter. That was like the first Disney movie she's seen like last week. Mm-hmm. So we just seen that, and then like, here we go.
Brilliant. Well, I loved it, and that spaghetti eating scene was gross but very entertaining at the same time. And then Hook, of course, he's got his hand. I was surprised by how much they downplayed that. He gets his hand back after all these years, and it's like, you want your hand back? Oh, sure. Just sign this contract, and then, boop, there you have it. But, it's going to be a problem. And then apparently it is, and you get that almost kind of that invisible Hook syndrome, you know, when people lose one of their limbs, and it feels as if it's still there. It's almost as if here it's the opposite, and there is this new hand, but it is affecting him more than he wants. He wants to get rid of that hand again. And then in the end, of course, it all turns out to be, you know, basically psychological. It's not the hand that was the cause of the problem, but it was Hook himself. I felt that was a little bit contrived.
Just a way to get him back under Mr. Gold's spell kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I was like, okay, if it's not the hand, then why not strike another deal and just say, well, just give me the hand back anyway. I mean, I would almost feel like, well, Gold technically did what he was supposed to do contract-wise, but he did, you know, kind of hide some pretty important details there. And he made the customer believe that the hand would have a certain influence. I don't know. It's just... It's a manipulation of Gold, which I think is kind of disappointing. I thought this guy was on the right track, but no.
It seems like he's totally gone off the rails since he made all these promises to himself, and he made a graveyard promise to his son, and then. But as soon as he saw that wizard's hat, everything went off the rails, and he seems like he's back in pursuit of being able to be free of the dagger again, all over again.
And in a way, I'm kind of disappointed that he is now back to his evil self, because you can only have so many evil people in one season, right? So we've got the angry Snow Queen wreaking havoc. We've got Gold. And so what do we get? What happens to Regina? She's just sitting in her lair with Henry, and she's not doing anything. You know, she's just like, yeah, I'm trying to figure out, but it doesn't work, and I'm just sitting here being sad. And it's like, oh, bring back that old, evil, powerful Regina. We need some, you know, some female evilness in this series.
Well, and that's what I did like about the Gold, you know, seeing Gold and Rumpel making their deals. You know, I love that he whips out the contract again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anna, you know, but I always liked Rumpel a little bit more evil. I don't like him sweet and nice. It's just not as interesting. So I like seeing him wheel and deal, because that's exactly what he used to do. And, you know.
But I want him to have an opponent that is actually either trying to stop him by being more evil or trying to stop him by being good, like Belle was. But I don't want him to just be evil and get away with it. There is something.
Maybe they're
like,
building up to, you know, sorcerer or the Snow Queen. Because we still don't know Snow Queen, I mean, how all this is going to fit in. So maybe they're just having to bring back a little bit of his nasty to so it'll be believable.
I can't wait. I love that moment where Hook shows up, or, well, Mr. Hand.
Captain Hand.
And even though he looks like a pirate and you expect him to be very, you know, like swashbuckling and kind of brash, but he's not. He's actually very old-fashioned, and he's like that question, like, where's the rest of the dress?
That was brilliant. Oh, and the fun part was...
Oh, actually, no, that wasn't... Wait a minute.
It was Elsa who said that.
That was Elsa, yes. But Hook also seems to be taken aback a bit by, you know, these modern ways of Emma.
There's no leather jacket. That's what he's stunned.
No.
Yeah.
And well, by the way, they did use hashtag Captain Hand is all over Twitter.
Oh, good. Nice.
Hey, I swear there's some movie or something, and it was kind of, I was watching this whole episode with the hand. I'm like, where a hand gets infected and takes over and, like, kills people and, like, the person... I could have sworn there's like some sort of famous tale that goes with it, like either an Edgar Allan Poe kind of thing, or
You're right.
I did it for Evil Dead 2, but I'm not sure if that's exact. No, it's
like, maybe, yeah. You know what?
you're not Evil Dead or Adam's Family? Could that be?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, because I'm like, I've seen this before, and I couldn't remember where I've seen it, and it was driving me nuts. I'm like, there's a story or a novel or a movie or where, you know, somebody gets a hand infected by something or reattached, and it's evil, and...
Well,
yeah.
It sounds very...
I just remember the old Evil Dead 2 movie where the guy got his hand infected, and it literally beat him up and threw him across the room several times.
It kind of feels plausible that hand is from the past, and then some of that evilness from the past will seep back into his veins. So actually, I was a bit disappointed that the hand wasn't the cause of it, and it was just psychological. I was like, oh, really? Well, Lisa.
So Deborah, I just looked. There's a 1999 horror comedy, which I don't know how you have a horror and a comedy, called Idle Hands, and that's right. The kid's hand becomes possessed and goes on a killing spree even after being cut off from his arm. So there you go.
Interesting.
That was a Seth Green movie. I remember that one.
That, it is. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm amazed to hear that you guys are watching all that stuff. I haven't even heard of.
It's one of those ones you want to ask for your money back on. But yeah, they made the movie. I'll say that.
When you're younger, you go through that whole let's watch horror movies even though they're bad.
Oh gosh.
And that could have probably been, why I remember that.
I cannot watch horror movies. That's probably why I didn't see that. But anyway. We're going into our break here in a minute, and when we get back, we will talk a little bit more about the whole story with Anna and her encounter with Rumpelstiltskin being his evil self, and then of course we talk a little bit about her role and the bigger story that is in the background, because of course Anna is still looking for her sister and trying to help, and turns out that didn't work out the way that she hoped. I think just too kind, she's just too friendly, and that is not something that is rewarded in a world ruled by evil. You're listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and that is just one of the many shows that we have over at the StarQuest Production Network, which is the name of our podcast network, you could say. And we do these television shows for a couple of years now. We've done shows about the Babylon 5, for instance, Star Trek. We have a current podcast about Star Wars called The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about the movies that are currently in production. It's very exciting, especially now we all know that Disney owns Star Wars, which means that they're going to make sure that we will watch Star Wars movies every year, because that's how they monetize that very expensive franchise. I'm really looking forward for the first crossover between the world of Once Upon a Time and the world of Star Wars, if that will ever happen. Then we talked about the severed hand in this episode. Well, coincidentally, that has been one of the major themes of our discussion over at The Secrets of Doctor Who, during which we talked about the episode Flatline. It's a brilliant episode where the Doctor comes face to face with a two-dimensional enemy. And you've got this whole philosophical theme of two spheres, one that exists of two dimensions and a three-dimensional sphere. That's the one that we live in how they clash and what happens then. It's a fun show to do. It's very similar to the format that we use here for Secrets of Once Upon a Time. We watch an episode, we get together with a few fans, and then we just talk, we speculate what's going to happen next, what are the inside jokes, the things in the background. Doctor Who does that in a very similar way to Once Upon a Time. So that's a show you might enjoy. Also, Deborah, very soon we're going to start, rekindle our love for the classic Disney movies with Secrets of Disney. And you've already been looking at some of the movies that we could potentially talk about. What is the one movie that you absolutely want to talk about once we restart the series?
Well, we kind of had arguments about which ones we should start with. We wanted to kind of go in chronological order, so, and then also do some new ones, but like Cinderella's one, Beauty and the Beast is one. I kind of want to do Wreck-It Ralph. I'm not going to lie. Because I think that'd be fun. That's just a walk back to Atari history with me, and I'd love to do that one.
I'm a huge fan of Wreck-It Ralph. It's funny because, my brother hated it. And we're from the same generation. We played all those games. And he's like, this is one of the worst movies ever, and it's not funny. And it's like, wow, I just loved every single minute of it.
Me too. And then I was wondering if we should do Frozen, and there's been a little discrepancy about that, but we haven't settled on a list yet. But if you have suggestions or a movie that you would like to hear in the next season of Secrets of Disney, we'd love to hear about it.
Let us know. You can actually send us an email, and it's disney@sqpn.com. So disney@sqpn.com. If you have a favorite movie that we haven't talked about yet, then let us know. And who knows? We might spend an hour talking about all the secrets in that movie. You can find previous episodes. If this show is a show that you've never checked out, you've never listened to before, you can go to the website of that particular show, and it's disney.sqpn.com. We haven't been sued yet by Disney, so we'll just keep the URL as it is. It's an educational show anyway. So disney.sqpn.com. Yes?
I was going to say, well, they should be thanking us, because then yes. You're going to go watch the movie again.
Absolutely. We'll buy it on DVD and on Blu-ray. You're listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and we are discussing the episode The Apprentice. And of course, the question is, who is the apprentice? Because we see actually a couple of apprentices. And the final one, well, we heard the fragment at the beginning of the show, turns out to be Henry, who becomes the new apprentice, and that would make Gold the sorcerer. Well, he's definitely an evil sorcerer in this episode. And yeah.
I don't know if Gold is the sorcerer. What if there's a more benevolent, you know, sorcerer out there that we haven't met yet?
Oh, sure. No, I mean, absolutely. But it seems to be with the sorcerers and the apprentices, just like the evil Sith Lord and their apprentices. There are always two, there can be more of them. Or if I may make, now that we're doing a show about Doctor Who, I can make a Doctor Who reference as well. It's like the Doctor and the Companion. There are, you know, several Doctors, several Companions. So, yeah, I'm sure that there is going to be the owner of the hat at one point will probably show up, and that will be a big deal. By the way, in the chat room, Kate tells us that ABC has extended their order to 23 episodes, and the final episode of this first half of the season will be a 2-hour episode. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, that's good.
It's airing on the 16th of November already. Wow, would that be the last one of the first half?
That sounds soon, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's episode 8. Or perhaps it's just, you know, one episode that they're going to extend a little bit. Then there's we've had these like subsequent breaks in the past, but I thought that they would just do a whole run, do the winter break, and then come back in the, you know, in at springtime to finish the season. But I don't know. Things change in television land. Let's go back to Storybrooke, at least, where things, well, also change, but not as drastically. Let's talk about Henry and Regina here for a second. There are just a few minutes dedicated to their encounter. Regina is in her lair trying to find out how to unfreeze Marion, but no luck there. What do you think of this situation? How is that going to resolve itself? Any theories or hopes?
They have to unfreeze her. I'm sorry. She just can't be, you know, Sleeping Beauty. She can't do that. But I think when she wakes up, you're going to find out that, you know, that's when they'll be like, oh, I'm not really in love with my husband. And she'll, like, either disappear or...
When I was in a coma, I heard everything you said, and now I understand that you don't truly love me anymore. Go your own way. I'll go with my child.
Well, and maybe there's still going to be a true love's kiss. I mean, so there could be somebody else who's like, I was alone with Marion when her husband wasn't with her, and, you know, I love her even though we've never kissed.
Hmm.
Which I hate to say, you know, that moral... That moral kind of area get a little, but I can't. There has to be. I hate to say she can't die because that would just be sad. But
you know,
maybe
what?
She will.
Well, or Robin could die. That could happen too. That would solve the problem, and there might be like one final farewell kiss. You know,
solve someone's problems, but I think
Well, I don't know.
The rest of us would be like, why did you even bring him into this?
Right. Yeah. Well, I remember Tinkerbell said it was like her true love and this and that, and then he's just going to die. Oh.
Sometimes I'm wondering if the writers even know where they're going with this. This might be one of those story threads where they came up with it, and we'll figure out later how we're going to resolve this love triangle. But something needs to happen. And kind of freezing, you know, Marion to temporarily put things on hold, it kind of feels a little bit like it's a little bit too convenient. Plus, I still believe that Regina in this episode was like a lame duck. It's like, why is she even there? And what's her purpose in the overall storyline? I think ultimately she is going to go face to face with, or head to head, I should say, with the Ice Queen. There's been a confrontation before. But right now, I was thinking, you know what? These scenes, I understand that they have to remind us of the other story threads, but it was almost unnecessary because there was so much in this episode, which was, you know, good enough for me.
You know, part of the reason I think you saw Henry and her concocting stuff in her lair is I think in the next episode you're going to see Henry start using magic.
Oh, that is a good point.
Oh, that you know what you said? He's the apprentice now. He had the broom mm-hmm. and everything. And what does the sorcerer's apprentice do?
He's like, I don't want to sweep the floor. And he turns the broom into an enchanted broom.
He's going to steal the hat.
Yeah.
Perhaps he wants to help out his mom by stealing the hat, and then everything goes awry.
Well, you know he's going to poke around and look at stuff.
Of course. Whatever. Don't touch it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, and he's, you know, he's got to have magic because his mom has magic. His grandparents have magic in, you know, various forms.
That'd be sweet. Finally, he will bring his character to a higher level. What I was appreciating is that he's much more adult now. I mean, he starts to understand, you know, adults. Like, are you really all right with this, Henry? No, I'm not, but I just want the best for you. It's like, yeah, it's kind of awkward to have my mom going on a date. I totally feel I feel for him. But he seems to be adult enough to kind of, you know that that's what's supposed to happen. And I also really liked the conversation with Regina. You know, he seems to be much more understanding of how these things work, and stories need to have a happy ending, and perhaps we can rewrite the book. So in that respect, perhaps it was a necessary scene.
I just think that sometimes I'm just watching this episode, and then I went back to Netflix and watched a couple of others in the first season. It's just very different from, you know, the first season. He was a lot of he was like, my mom is evil. She's the evil queen. I hate you. And now he's willing to try to rewrite the book to help her.
Yeah. Well,
very, 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 very gone very far.
But it's great because that's how people evolve. And this show is not, I mean, it's about archetypes, but at the same time, it's also about change is always possible. People can change. And then sometimes they will change for good, which seems to be the case with Regina. And with Gold, it just didn't stick. Because evil is so powerful, the addiction to power and to taking shortcuts to get where you want to go, it's a little bit too much for old Mr. Rumpel. Mike in the chat room suggests that perhaps Marion will end up with Will Scarlet, which is another kind of loose element in this episode where we're reminded of this drunkard that ends up in the library with a bottle of whiskey. And I'm thinking, why is he in this episode? You know, there could have been other ways for Hook to manifest his anger. But that might actually be that's a good suggestion because he's part of the Merry Men. So he could, perhaps there's been a romance in the past with Marion. Oh, that would be cheesy, but who knows?
Actually, okay, so I've not watched Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of y'all watched it or not. But from stuff I keep seeing online, they call him Will Scarlet, but they also call him the Knave, which is from Alice in Wonderland. Mm-hmm. And that's the book he had was Alice in Wonderland.
Yes.
And the picture that Emma pulled out was the Queen of Hearts.
Well,
I'm sorry. The Red Queen. It was the Red Queen. Sorry. Queen of Hearts is, mm-hmm. what's her face's mother? Cora. It was the Red Queen. And the picture was an actual character from Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Anastasia, who played the Red Queen. So was he on, and I guess I need to go watch Wonderland now. So was he on Wonderland? And is this a reference to the other show? So why and what are we doing with that? And why are we bringing up Alice in Wonderland?
That's clearly, I think, something that the writers want us to do is to go and watch that spin-off series, which has not been as successful as Once Upon a Time, but does have its share of fans. It's unfortunate that in our panel we have no one who actually took the time to watch that. I really tried. Honestly, I watched 4 or 5 episodes and I just couldn't get into it. But it's just one of those things that is in my backlog, but there are so many other things I need to watch first. But if people have a theory about that, you know, it's easy to reach us. We have a Facebook page. You can go to our blog, onceuponatime.sqpn.com. And if I'm sure that in our audience, we have people who have watched that and have some very good theories about what yes. Will Scarlet's role is going to be in this season. Please let us know, and we'll definitely use that in our discussion.
Fill us in.
Yeah. Perhaps they are the ones who write these hate reviews on iTunes. These people know nothing. They do a show about Once Upon a Time. They don't even take the time to watch the Wonderland. Well, we apologize. We're busy people. We just, yeah. We're flawed, just like the people in Storybrooke. Oh well, let's go back to the story with Anna and the extensive flashback that we get. Your skin looks so weird. Oh, I mean, no, it looks actually fine, but still weird. But what did you think of her character? It felt a little bit too blue-eyed. You know, like I'm so clueless that I don't really feel.
They don't really know how to translate her character from the movie to a real life character and not a cartoon. So yeah. they're trying really hard to kind of keep her the same. But I have to say, I liked her more in this episode than I've liked her so far since we've seen Anna. Because, it gave her a little humanity. Not just, oh, I'm so clueless and I'm just going to be naive and, you know, tell David to fight the whatever, you know. I liked it. I liked that she did get mad at Rumpel. She signed that darn contract just like everybody else does.
In certain ways, you know, her deep goodness, and it's very, she's very transparent, and she doesn't want to hurt people, and she's like very immediate, doing the right thing all the way. Reminds me a little bit of Snow White, but she misses that kind of other side that Snow White also had, that kind of like powerful, you know, in control.
Warrior princess.
She's too much a Disney princess. Too sweet. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just hope that there's something is going to happen. But right now she's so sweet that it's almost, it's a fairy tale. You know.
Yeah.
Something needs to happen with her.
Not too much.
I do like the whole manipulation in that sequence where we. You know, clearly Rumpelstiltskin knew that she was not going to do what he asked her to do, and that gives her power over her, but also over the situation. And she really is lured into his plans. It's the old Rumpelstiltskin, you know, always one step ahead of everyone, even of the good people.
I liked seeing that.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked seeing it again. I've kind of missed him that way.
And I kind of love that the writing as well, where he's like, you think something happens, and then, oh, wait, there is a twist. He already knew. And it's all to get to that magical hat. And there's also a big theme in here, which is also reminiscent of the earlier seasons in this show. It's about love. You know, Anna is outraged. Well, not she's not angry, but she's just taken aback by the fact that he seems to be willing to use love as a weapon.
Yeah,
it's like it's not supposed to be that way, and that's very pure and true. But he is like, oh dearie, love is a weapon, and few people know how to wield it. But I know, and it's like, really?
He never used it for anything else. Back then, he never used it for anything.
Back then, he doesn't really know the true power of love. That's true. He only he disfigures love. But you're still wondering. So he's using other people's love, and he doesn't know that he has love himself that he can use, not as a weapon, but as a tool for good. But it's all about manipulation. Hook is being manipulated. Anna is being manipulated. It seems that Rumpelstiltskin and Gold are constantly winning in this episode. That's probably why I was a little bit irked. I was like, I need some resistance. Where are the rebels in this episode? But it's probably something that we will see later. Hook, of course, wants his hand back. Rumpel uses that to get him to. Actually, there's a very cool visual element first, and that's the walking broomstick. I love that. That mm-hmm. looked so straight out of Fantasia. And I want to see more of those broomsticks. I want to see thousands of them.
And they did a good job with it, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, mm-hmm. the shadow, and it was just like as if it was there in the scene.
Makes you wonder if they got a little bit bigger budget this year, because they've had some really cool effects.
However, the castle or the Rumpelstiltskin's place looks still kind of like 2D and not really convincing. Oh, anyway. Can't have
The broom was nice. The broom was nice.
The broom was very, very nice. So they follow the broom, and it brings them, of course, to the Sorcerer's Apprentice, which then gets sucked into the magical vacuum cleaner, which almost looks like another like portal. It's something like reminded me of the Green Portal. What will be the consequences of that? We'll continue our discussion after a short break. If you like fairy tales and you like stories about fairy tales and sometimes think about what these fairy tales could mean for our lives, you know, because ultimately fairy tales and stories are like mirrors for our own reality and they contain some valuable lessons. Well, it's one of the things that I write about in my book, the book is not called The Secrets of Media Priest. It's called Geek Priest, Confessions of a New Media Pioneer. In one of the chapters, I talk about my visit to Disneyland. And actually, Deborah, you're part of one of those chapters, I think.
Yes. yes.
And it's basically a collection of stories of the past, 15 years, the time that I worked in new media, but also the way in which stories like Star Wars, like fairy tales, superhero stories have played a major role in, the story of my life. And the book itself has been out for a while. If you haven't read it, you can go over to sqpn.com/geekpriest and you will find some links to the paper book, but there's also an audio book. And I'm still waiting for that $1 million donation, and if that ever arrives on my doorstep, I will rewrite the book in any way you want, and I can give it a your happy ending. No, just kidding. But as an author of the book, I'm still thinking, you know what? Would I rewrite the book? I'm pretty sure I would, because, you know, once I wrote it down, I started rewriting it, and at one point, you just have to stop and just get it out there. But anyway, if you're curious to read more about my adventures in the world of new media and fairy tales, go over to sqpn.com/geekpriest, and by purchasing the book, you will also support our network. All right, back to Storybrooke and Anna. I was a bit surprised that after the mouse fight and Anna, that was a brilliant scene where she discovers the power of the dagger, and mm-hmm. she's like, "Oh yes, so you are going to do this. Oh, and you're also going to, you know, turn him back into a human being." And then the anger of Rumpelstiltskin was, I don't think I've ever seen him this angry. I really loved it. Oh, I mean, just angry of being controlled, you know, suffering the limitations of his power, the frustration. I thought it was brilliant.
Well, no, it doesn't happen very often that someone just gets the best of him just like that.
Well, he's being manipulated. Now he feels how it feels to be manipulated, what mm-hmm. he does to other people. And he's not a gracious loser. He hates it.
And by a sweet and innocent type. You know, she, of all the people, you know, it wasn't someone big, bad, and evil. It was like the sweet little Disney princess.
How is it that Belle could melt his heart, but Anna couldn't?
Oh.
Anna didn't really, I mean, that was over a fairly long time, I thought, weeks or longer, and this is an afternoon or something like that.
It's true, and then she's there with a very specific purpose.
She's there to, you know, serve a purpose. Yeah, you're right. To serve a purpose for him, and Belle, not so much.
If I had to compare personalities between Belle and Anna, I think Anna is more innocent than Belle.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think Belle is more realistic, and Belle is more like, you can't, you know, I really see you for who you are. Whereas Anna is a little more naive.
Well, Belle, I think, really challenged him. And Anna, yeah. not. I mean, she's so easily manipulated that it's probably just not interesting enough for Rumpelstiltskin. But mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised because both of them are really good people. And, well, the goodness in his own heart is only triggered by Belle. It's probably also because they wrote in Anna much later and, well, he already had a girlfriend.
Yeah. Now wife, so, yeah.
Yep. So, but then, to my great surprise, Anna gets sent back to, what's the name of her kingdom?
Arendelle.
And she ends up in the stable with Olav and the
Kristoff.
Or what's the guy's name?
Kristoff. Is her fiance, and then her.
Oh, Sven. It's Sven. Sven and Kristoff.
Yeah. Sven is like
That scene. It was funny at the same time. It was so cheesy with the Sven in the background, like I don't smell. You smell. I'm not sure. It was a little bit childish. I mean, I was laughing at the same time. I was thinking, this is a bit over the top, those scenes. Am I being too negative?
No, because I think it's kind of ridiculous, too. But, you know, it's closely tied to the movie. So,
It is. Oh, well. Oh, and by the way, before I forget, when we get the... the apprentice is sucked into the magical hat... Rumpel picks it up, and then there is this one little twinkling star. Is that where he is?
I think that's the apprentice now, this little tiny dot.
It's one of the stars on the hat. So all these stars are people or magic. I don't know. I was like, is there more
magic,
to this?
Either magic users or items of magic. I thought that we get, you know, they get sucked up in there. Like every one of those little lights is either a magical item or a magical person, I guess.
Currently.
Hey, Father, this is a little bit off topic, but it's also deals with the hat.
Yes.
When you were in Florida, did I ever take you to the 3D PhilharMagic, Mickey's PhilharMagic, where Goofy or Mickey gets a hold, no, Donald gets a hold of the hat and like.
I think we saw that, yes.
But I'm wondering if you're right, if there are other people and things inside the hat, and he'll be starting pulling things out of his hat.
Mm-hmm.
Much like, you know, the attraction at Disney World, which is a terrible thing to reference because, you know, it's so obscure Disney. But, you know, there's everything in that hat. I mean, there's all the Disney characters are in that hat.
Well, who knows? I don't know. I mean, I think it's such an iconic object that they have to give it a big role. And you know what? The fact that Henry is now in the vicinity of that hat, it opens up all sorts of possibilities. Because in a way, Henry is a little bit like Mickey Mouse, right? He's kind of like innocent, sweet, always wants to do the right thing. But then again, he's young, inexperienced, and he might do some stupid stuff. So there are lots and lots of possibilities. Will we ever see Donald Duck in this series? And will it be Donald Duck or will it just be a regular white duck?
Well, that'd be funny.
Or a human being in Donald Duck's costume, but probably not a good idea, seeing that he has no pants. Okay. Yeah. Enough. Anyway, it's. I was like, that twinkling star, that's probably going to go come back. And then you get the whole exchange again with apparently there was an old-fashioned security system in that house, and there's a VHS tape. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an old guy, so perhaps his technology is a little bit backwards as well. But why would he have, in his own living room, why would he have a security camera with a VHS tape? You know, he's clearly been
with iPhones.
He's the only person who has been there for centuries, probably. That's kind of he must have lost part of his mind over all these years. It's just having a security camera in his own living room. I don't know, but
I was just one like the old. I mean, this he was the, well, the originally this town was stuck in the 80s. So I was wondering if there was still some of that there.
Could be. Oh, yeah, that might actually be it. Yes.
And, you know, if he, you know, he could be, you know, after years of having to you know, watch out for things, I'd be pretty paranoid too.
No, you're right. That's actually a very good good point you make, because of course his house is built on top of the cavern that that held the magic box, right? So it does make sense. He's a guard, so he needs to have security tape.
And how, you know, this is something that I thought about when he was like, "Let me just erase this tape and myself from this tape." And I'm thinking to myself, that is, I hate to give away trade secrets of the police, but one of the things, if they don't have something on tape or if they want to really scare people, mm-hmm. is they put a tape on the desk, and they don't really mention what's on the tape, nor do they show what's on the tape. They just hope that the tape will actually, you know,
yes.
provide incentive to either confess or to change or to blackmail. And in this case, I'm like, I wouldn't take his word for it that he's erasing himself. I'd want to see it.
Prove it to me. Yeah, and I'm thinking, you know what? They all know Gold, so he could get away. They know that Hook is a good guy now. So, I don't know. It just... I like it that he's now, he's got Hook under control, but at the same time, I was thinking, not very convincing the way in which they took some shortcuts in this episode. But it's all for the story, and I'm sure that next week, that will be rewarded, hopefully. What's the title of next week's episode? Is it?
It is Breaking Glass.
Breaking Glass. I'm just asking because I have to Google the trailer so I can play it.
It says I'm assuming we're going to see Sydney, right? Mr. Glass. I mean.
Yeah, probably. I'm going to play the sound of the trailer here and then we'll wrap things up. Let me see. Yeah, Sydney has to be back. I mean, it's all about glass and mirrors.
Listen closely. Next Sunday, when darkness falls.
Elsa, help me.
And terror rules the night.
You ruined my life.
Magic springs from cruel desire.
Soon I will have what I want.
Storybrooke doesn't stand a chance.
And evil comes to light.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to build a snowman.
New Once Upon a Time, next Sunday, 8, 7 Central, part of ABC's Spooktacular.
Spooktacular. I love that quote. I'm going to build a snowman.
Spooktacular.
Just keep piling it up. All the references. We have to watch that movie, buy the CD, and sing these songs forever and ever. Amen. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Lisa, where can people find you on the web?
Shelley and I blog at soundmindandspirit.com.
Very well. David, are you on the interwebs?
I am on the interwebs. I can be found, well, currently on Twitter at David Handlos. It's just the handle, H-A-N-D-L-O-S, and Facebook, also David Handlos, where you might or might not see me post a lot of random useless facts throughout the week.
Isn't that what you do on Facebook? What people do on Facebook anyway? It's like almost redundant to say that. I'm on Facebook, so... No, I should speak for myself. And finally, Deborah.
Well, you can find my podcast, iPilgrim Podcast, which I haven't done one recently. So you're better off finding me right now on Instagram, believe it or not.
Really?
DisLP38, DISLP38. That's also my Twitter handle. And that's, you can also find me, Deborah Shaben, Deborah Jane Shaben, on Facebook. So
excellent. And I'm Father Roderick. You can find me on the StarQuest Production Network, sqpn.com, where we have a lot of shows, as I mentioned before, Secrets of Star Wars, Secrets of Doctor Who. I do a weekly show called The Break, another weekly show called The Walk, and another show called, what was it again? Geek Week? Many more shows. We're actually preparing a whole bunch of new shows that will be launched over the course of the next couple of weeks. We're also very soon going to start our yearly fund drive in order to make sure that we can continue to produce these shows, publish them on the web, have a website that functions when you want to go to it. So if you want to find out how you can pay the bills, that's probably it. Just go to sqpn.com/donate. where you can find all the information. And we really appreciate the support that we get, even if it's just by the friendly reviews that we find on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. Take care. Thanks.